Happy, happy weekend. Come on, it's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy's here. It's 9:06. Time check brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. Biddly boop bop beep bop boo.
Little off there, just a little off.
Oh, I've been told that before. Just a little off, and yes. Look at this illustrious career that has blossomed out of a minor personality defect. Thank you for noticing, Greg.
Isn't that amazing?
I think so. Yeah. It's only happening because the good Lord has made it so.
That's true.
Left to my own devices.
Who knows what you'd be doing?
Whew. Yeah, probably not. Probably not doing well. Yeah. Did you hear about this? The guy who was running the morgue for Harvard? He's a Harvard morgue guy.
They got a Harvard morgue guy?
Yeah, they have a morgue at Harvard because if you're going to teach people how to be physicians and stuff,
yeah.
You're going to deal with cadavers, and yep. There is a lot of things you can do scientifically, obviously, okay. And medically. Okay. And so, yes.
People donate their bodies to science.
That's right.
That's where they use them. Okay.
That's right.
I get it now. Okay.
And
I'm like, sure, every school's got a morgue. You never know we're going to need one. But now I get it.
Well, and the only reason we're talking about this is because the guy who was running the morgue was selling body parts.
So he's a little entrepreneurial on the side.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, things around the workplace were kind of dead.
Wow.
And left to his own devices and seeing, clearly there's not enough body parts here for sale on eBay. Why don't I help them stock the shelves?
Wow.
Cedric Lodge.
Yes.
57, who actually lives in New Hampshire, pleaded guilty to interstate transport of stolen human remains. Yeah, according to news release from the U.S. Attorney's Office, the maximum penalty under federal law is 10 years in prison and supervised release following, fine, et cetera. And,
well, that's a stiff sentence.
Wow.
Sorry.
No, that was good. I'm just upset I didn't think of it first. A former Harvard Medical School morgue manager has entered a plea in relation to the alleged scheme to steal and sell donated body parts. Now, if I can think of something positive to come from it, well, at least they had their usefulness. In other words,
these
weren't fresh.
Right, they've been used for the science.
They'd been used by the school, and then they were sent to him, and they're
supposed to do something
with dispose
them.
Of it properly.
Right. So he's thinking, okay, I can cremate these or whatever, and they go to no use whatsoever, or I can make a few bucks.
Recycling. I mean, we've all been taught.
Yeah.
But apparently that's not really what you're supposed to do. He removed human remains, it appears, including organs, brains, skin, hands, faces, dissected heads, and other parts from donated cadavers after they had been used for research and teaching purposes, but before they could be disposed of according to the anatomical gift donation agreement between the donor and the school. Yes, you sign off. Yes, you can use my body for science because it is the modern day David. No. So when they're done using it, the agreement is they'll dispose of it in a manner that you find satisfactory. He took the remains to his home in New Hampshire without permission or knowledge of his employer. Another major no-no. Harvard Medical School called the incident morally reprehensible. After he and his wife sold the remains, they would ship the remains to the buyers in other states, or the buyer would take possession directly and transport the remains themselves. Remains stolen and sold by Lodge for a profit were sent to locations in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Pennsylvania. And his criminal actions, morally reprehensible and disgraceful betrayal of the individuals who altruistically, I know I'm saying that wrong, chose to will their bodies to Harvard Medical School's anatomical gift program in advance to advance the medical education research. Yep.
Well, and it's one of those deals where, he knows better, but sometimes money just kind of makes you make bad decisions.
Mummy?
Money, money.
Oh, I thought you said mummy.
Wow.
No, I really did.
Your brain was going down that road, you know.
It was. Yeah. Let's see where Jeff's brain takes us.
That's always a scary thought.
On the Davis-Gainesville Chevrolet Skylines. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, would it be safe to say that that guy's defense would be dead on arrival?
Oh. Yeah, probably so. Sounds like a lot of things in Tallahassee, but that's another story entirely.
That's another story entirely. But at least
we
are not going to have suppression of the suppressors any longer if this big, beautiful bill passes.
Yeah, got to get it through the Senate. That'd be good. And of course, AOC already harping
on it. She had to notice
it. She's an idiot, but because she knows nothing about suppressors or being suppressed, which she should. That could be a good thing. It's a tough situation, though, because if they take the $200 away off suppressors, which they will, and if they also take it off the NFA list, which they're supposed to, they're going to sell a whole bunch of them. But the fact that you're waiting for the Senate to make up their mind, a lot of folks may be putting off those purchases, and that's not necessarily a good idea because there'll be a run on them then. So it's kind of like, well, if you want one, maybe it's not a bad time. I don't know.
Let me explain to those that are not gun heads and obsessed with firearms like Greg is.
Uh-huh.
NFA, the National Firearms Act,
prohibited
suppressors to be sold without a federal tax stamp, which is $200. It's not that, though. It is all the legalese that goes along with being the recipient of that, including the ability to be able to present that special, in most cases it would be like a firearm, to present that if law enforcement should ask for that. And so the idea is suppressors aren't by themselves dangerous. In fact, they can be very, very useful in preserving a person's hearing.
Absolutely.
And that's how it got through, with the idea of, hey, I want to use a suppressor while I'm on this target range because it will reduce, you know, the sound damage done to, you know, myself and those around me, but also, neighbors and anybody else.
It is the Hearing Protection Act. And a lot of people around the world are allowed to use these things just fine because it really is a courtesy. Unfortunately, American politicians who are anti-gun anyway on the left have watched too many movies, and they think everybody's going to go out and try to be an assassin and can shoot things in total silence, but it doesn't work that way.
No, it's not silent, number one. And number two, everything that you do with a gun and you put a suppressor on there, if it's illegal without one, it's illegal with one.
So it doesn't change anything.
It's not a 007 type of license.
No, it's not. It's not a license to kill. But they'll call it that, probably.
But initially, I guess, when it was in the bill, they thought that they would at least get the $200 part of it removed, and then you'd still have to jump through the hoops,
right.
But at least you wouldn't have to pay that fee.
But that's not what Americans were asking for.
No, so they ended up actually getting a real kind of Second Amendment arrangement so that people can, you know, purchase a suppressor if this goes through completely without having to jump through any more hoops than buying any regular gun that you would buy.
And the reality is, it's silly that you even have to do it just like a gun because, again, sitting by itself, it does nothing. It can't hurt you unless you hit somebody in the head with it. It basically is a muffler. It's all it is. But, you know, it's government and they don't know any better. Or they do know better and they don't care what we think.
It's a muffler, huh?
It is. It's all it is. It's a muffler.
So it looks good for those of us who do appreciate, you know, the full utilization of our Second Amendment rights as presented by our, founding fathers. But you still have the Senate to get through.
Yes, we do.
So, here's to hoping, as I said on the promo. Here's hoping that it comes through unmolested. 9:16 on the Bob Rose Show, 30 minutes away from things that make you smile. More upbeat positive thoughts coming your way. We've also got your major headlines, stories of the day, and whatever else we can squeeze in there and get us ready for a three-day weekend. 97.3 The Sky. Good morning and welcome. It is 9:21 on the Bob Rose Show. Craig Cassidy is here. Your time check brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. A video that's going viral, if you haven't seen it yet, you probably will. It's of a puppy fighting off a pack of coyotes for 45 minutes.
What?
Yes.
What? Oh, my goodness.
I saw part of it.
Wow.
And the coyotes look kind of little.
Okay.
But
it's still a puppy, right? I mean.
Well, the puppy's a puppy, okay. and these coyotes are little, but that doesn't mean they're in a pack. They're still very dangerous.
Yeah.
And a courageous canine battled a pack of rabid coyotes.
Wow.
That's serious.
Yep.
That wandered into a suburban L.A. neighborhood in a life-or-death ordeal that lasted 45 minutes. Home security camera footage from Brea, California, showed the five ravenous coyotes skulk. I love to use that word, and I rarely get to do it. Skulk toward and surround the unsuspecting one-year-old stray, a Labrador Retriever German Shepherd mix. Aww.
Aww.
Now named Duke.
Ooh.
And this happened early hours earlier this month. The heroic dog swivels, bobs, and snarls to fend off his attackers, who scamper as a domesticated dog barks and bites back, exhibiting strong instincts. The pup eventually stands with his back against shrubs to prevent any more sneak attacks from the constantly circulating low-eared scavengers. As a bold stand, the coyotes stand back, refusing to get within biting distance of their larger counterpart. The homeowners whose camera filmed the action only saw the standoff when they woke up, and they scared the whole troop off, apparently. He knew how to protect himself and fight them off and kind of back into a corner against the little area there. He was able to fight them off, unbelievably. 2 days later, the brave puppy is still seen wandering the neighborhood. Well, those same folks called Orange County Animal Care. They brought him to a shelter. The dog is now named Duke. Was up for adoption as of Thursday morning, but online records show he probably has already found a new home. And he is cute. He is exactly what they say, like a lab German Shepherd mix. A shy but friendly boy who loves hanging out with other dogs. That is very cool. Yep. Those coyotes. And he was able to fend him off. So, you know, you gotta have like a happy doggy story once in a while, I think. Anyway, Tommy Tuberville, you know, the senator, you know, the former football coach, very successful, now is going to take on a new challenge. He hasn't officially said it. Tuesday he'll do a press conference, but it's pretty much out that he is going to run for governor of Alabama. Yeah, so
that's cool.
Good for you, Tommy Tuberville.
Yeah.
he's a Trump guy and a straight shooter, and all indications are, yeah, he's a good guy. I like him. What I know about him. Never forget what the weekend is all about. This is Memorial Day weekend. Alachua County's annual Memorial Day ceremony will take place on Monday at the historic Evergreen Cemetery in Gainesville. It's a free event that begins at 10 a.m. at the Veterans Monument. Attendees are encouraged to arrive by 9:30. This is the cemetery that's located at 401 Southeast 21st Avenue. A free lunch will also be provided. It's hosted by Alachua County Veterans Services in collaboration with the City of Gainesville, Vistar Credit Union, and Milam Funeral Homes. It'll honor and remember veterans and military service members who lost their lives in service to our nation. The event will feature a presentation of colors, an American flag ceremony, musical tributes, and inspirational words from area leaders. For more information, contact Alachua County Veteran Services at 352-264-6740, 264-6740. And there's, you know, of course, many kinds of memorials that will be going on throughout our community. So if you get an opportunity, try to take advantage of that. And I always say, especially, you know, if you've got younger friends or members of your family, and make sure that this kind of tradition is carried on and well, not to be forgotten, not ever.
Yeah.
And, you know, giving of their lives in service of their nation, unfortunately, there's a lot of people to remember and to memorialize. And that's what we do on Monday. But today, it is Happy Friday. Man, how about that cold front this morning? Whew, frost felt, on the windshield and all that.
Well, maybe
it was crazy.
It actually did feel really nice this morning.
It did feel nice.
It was cool.
I wouldn't call it a cold front. I'd call it.
No, that's what they call it, is a cold front.
That's what they.
The weather people.
Whoever they are.
The weather people.
Yeah. Yeah. They're about as honest as politicians.
Oh, it's not that they're dishonest. They're just not always right. Like, you know. You know what I mean.
Highly inaccurate.
That's another way.
I mean, unless. Unless you just happen to be a meteorologist tuning in, then we love you.
Yeah.
No, seriously, I mean, yeah, we got a little reprieve, and I do mean little, because it's going to be 94 today, 96 tomorrow, 95.
Well, it's warming up. It's almost 80 already, so yeah.
Yeah, it is going to warm up, and that's why I'll be looking for some sort of respite from the heat.
I'm sure.
Possibly the beach.
What?
Possibly friends that are out of town that own a swimming pool.
Oh, I see where you're going, like literally. Yeah.
No, I've actually been invited to enjoy.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't know if I will. It's still.
It's an option, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
But, yeah, maybe. All right. It is 9:27 already on the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. Good morning. Pump it up. Happy Friday. In about 15 minutes, things that make you smile on 97.3 The Sky. Well, I was looking for something different, and I believe I stumbled on it.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, prepare yourselves for this. 9:35 on the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. We really appreciate the support that this show gets. Very, very much so. And I want to thank you for that. And, of course, we can never say thanks to those who died in service of our nation, but that is what Memorial Day is all about, to remember. And you really have to also remember all the families. Those are the ones that suffer the enduring loss that continues year after year, that changes the makeup of families forever. So we have to keep that in mind, too. All right? So thank you. Thank you to all that serve. But the purpose of Memorial Day is specifically for those who gave their all in service to our nation. So I was looking for something a little bit different. I get tired of the same old very, very quickly. And I think a lot of people do. There's one I hadn't seen. An indigenous tribe from the Brazilian Amazon suing the New York Times.
What?
Yes.
How do they know it exists?
Well, they said the newspaper's reporting on the tribe's first exposure to the internet led to its members being widely portrayed as technology-addled and addicted to pornography.
Yeah, I remember this. I remember that story.
Oh, you do?
Yes, I do.
Wow.
It was a big deal, yeah.
And I don't think I remember sharing it, so you can't.
Well, I don't even know how long. I think it's been a long time.
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong.
But it's the Marubo tribe of the Yavari Valley, a sovereign community of about 2,000 people in the rainforest. They filed the defamation lawsuit seeking hundreds of millions of dollars in damages this week at a court in Los Angeles. It also names TMZ and Yahoo as defendants, alleging that their stories amplified and sensationalized the Times reporting and smeared the tribe in the process. And the suit says the Times June 2024 story. Does that sound right to you? About a little less than a year ago? It was reported by reporter Jack Nickus on how the group was handling the introduction of satellite service through Elon Musk's Starlink, portrayed the Marubo people as a community unable to handle basic exposure to the internet, highlighting allegations that their youth had become consumed by pornography. These statements were not only inflammatory, but conveyed to the average reader that the Marubo people had descended into moral and social decline as a direct result of internet access. Such portrayals go far beyond cultural commentary. They directly attack the character, morality, and social standing of an entire people, suggesting they lack the discipline or values to function in the modern world. In a statement to the Associated Press, a Times spokesperson said, "Any fair reading of this piece shows a sensitive and nuanced exploration of the benefits and complications of new technology in a remote indigenous village with a proud history and preserved culture. We intend to vigorously defend against the lawsuit." The theme of the story was that after less than a year of service, the community was now facing the same kinds of struggles with the pervasive effects of the internet and the proliferation of smartphones that much of the world has dealt with now for years. The author listed a broad range of those challenges: teenagers glued to phones, group chats full of gossip, addictive social networks, online strangers, violent video games, scams, misinformation, and minors watching pornography. He later wrote that a tribal leader, quote, is most unsettled by the pornography. He said young men were sharing explicit videos in group chats, a stunning development for a culture that frowns on kissing in public.
Wow.
So they're, They take that very seriously, you know, I guess a modest approach to sexuality. The piece makes no other mention of porn, but that aspect of the story was amplified and aggregated by other outlets, including TMZ, which ran a story and an accompanying video headlined, "Elon Musk's Starlink hookup leaves a remote tribe addicted to porn."
Right. Yep.
Yeah. That's the sensational way that TMZ, you know, does their thing. The suit says the video segment falsely framed the Marubo tribe as having descended into moral collapse. Messages seeking comment from TMZ and Yahoo not immediately answered. The misperceptions brought on by the aggregation and repackaging of the story led the Times to publish the follow-up. "The Marubo people are not addicted to pornography," Nikas wrote in the second story. "There was no hint of this in the forest, and there was no suggestion of it in the New York Times article." Yeah, maybe not addiction. So they put out that statement. Of course, that didn't satisfy the tribe, which says in the lawsuit that it failed to acknowledge the role the New York Times itself played in fueling the defamatory narrative. Rather than issuing a retraction or an apology, the follow-up downplayed the original article's emphasis on pornography by shifting blame to third-party aggregators. The reporter, Nikas, he wrote that he spent a week with the Marubo tribe. The lawsuit says that while he was invited for a week, he spent less than 48 hours in the village, barely enough time to observe, understand, or respectfully engage with the community. Wow. The plaintiffs also include community leader Enoch Marubo and Brazilian journalist and sociologist Flora Dutra, both of whom appeared in the story, both instrumental in bringing the tribe the internet connection, which they said had many positive effects, including facilitating emergency medicine and the education of children. All right. Well, they cited the TMZ video, which shows them setting up antennas for the connection, as creating the unmistakable impression that the two had introduced harmful, sexually explicit material into the community and facilitated the alleged moral and social decay. The lawsuit seeks at least $180 million, including both general and punitive damages from each defendant. The fallout from the publication was not limited to public perception. It destroys lives, institutions, and culturally significant projects.
That's a lot of bucks for a tribe.
Yeah.
Depending on who actually gets it.
Well, I mean, it's done in such a way, I believe they would all be part of plaintiffs to it, but I'm not absolutely positive on that. But yeah, there's about 2,000 of them. So
interesting.
I can't do the math that quickly on it, but I don't know. That's, 100,000 maybe or something close to it? Craig's like, I don't know. You're looking at me for it.
I don't like math.
I hate math.
I do.
Nobody likes math. Well, maybe a few people do. But anyway, that is a very interesting story. And, there could be some truth to it. So, yeah, you sue because of a perception left by an article? Right. Is that really, like, defamation? And how does it really hurt? Like, oh, I was going to go visit the Marubo tribe, but a bunch of pervs, man. I'm not doing that. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
How do you're going to have to prove some damage. That's going to be their challenge, is proving what did it really do, how did it affect their tribe, you know.
So. And if it...
does it deserve a monetary, you know, payout?
And what if the New York Times says something along the lines of, hey, look, we're seeing how, in a very short period of time, behavior seems to, reflect what we see in our modern society that's had the internet for years. In other words, didn't take you long to catch up. And that maybe the article also serves as a warning as to who should be introduced to the internet.
Right.
Are you really doing someone a favor?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Right?
When you giving people access to things that can be misused, no matter what it is, can be a downside.
Well, I mean, and it's also there's a sense of arrogance. Like, of course, these people want to be connected to the rest of the world. Not necessarily. It'd be like kind of, when we come, Europeans to, this new land, I mean, we can teach those natives our language. We can teach them to read and write. We can cut their hair and get them to sit in a classroom, and we can make fine people out of them.
Right.
As though their culture is completely, not fine.
Well, look what we've done in the Middle East. We've tried to go in. We throw the bad leader out, who we find out later was doing a really good job of keeping the factions separated. But we want to come in, give them the American way, and they don't want it because it's not their way of thinking, and it never turns out good.
And they can't. It's almost like they can't handle it.
No, it just does not turn
out
well.
Freedom, that's one of the things that makes America unique, is freedom here was literally fought for. By the people. They sacrificed. They wanted a true sense of freedom. And that was something as a nation that we very much agreed upon.
But we were founded on it, and we have had that mentality for generations.
Culturally, yes.
To try to shove that on somebody who's been at war for 3,000 years, guess what? They may not want what we have.
It's too much freedom. I know it's hard for some to believe that, but, well, it's like, you're letting someone out of prison and you say, yeah, you're not monitored. You don't have anybody to see. It's not a parole or anything else. You are just done.
No support.
Just go and do whatever you want. That person probably needs a lot of guidance, especially depending on how long that they had been incarcerated.
Yeah.
You wouldn't just kind of unleash them, so to speak, for their own health and maybe for the health of the community. So, yeah, you expose people to this stuff, and then you kind of, it's almost like an experiment.
Yeah.
But
it never works out.
Yeah. And then that's not fair either, is it? Hey, let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Let's throw this thing in there. It's almost like we're doing a reality show, and we're playing, kind of the director-producer. Because, reality shows, if you think they're kind of silly and boring, well, you have no idea how silly and boring they would be if they didn't have these staffs writing the drama that just happens to pop up. You know what I mean? It's all manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
Completely and utterly manufactured. But anyway, I don't want to stray off the original thing. But the New York Times, big lawsuit. Who would have thought?
Hmm.
A tribe living in the rainforest in Brazil might end up taken down.
That's amazing.
The New York Times, the Gray Lady, and TMZ, because they really seems like, they're going to do that with a headline. They're going to make it. They're going to make it that way. Hmm. All right. So the big, beautiful bill moves on to the Senate. That is a good thing, but not according to AOC. She's trying to use the fear tactic, and tell you that 13.7 Americans are going to lose their health care. Well, are these people that were qualified to have the health care to begin with? Because that's one of the things that this bill does, is say, okay, if you're on Medicaid, you're going to have to prove that you're still eligible not just once a year, but twice a year. And yeah, and because otherwise it's not fair. If you're living above the line where you get, you know, Medicare coverage, that's fraud. You're cheating the system and you're costing taxpayers money and probably taking away health care from somebody else. So there's that. All right, I am done. Done with it all. I want nothing but upbeat, positive thoughts now, and so do you for the next 3 days, right? All right. It's time for things that make you smile. It's time for upbeat, positive thoughts. You can share those with us at 877-975-9825. Things that make you smile is brought to you by Transformation Dentistry and Dr. Samantha Annis. So call in now, 877-975-9825. Thanks, Greg, for the translation.
Yep.
I would have been outraged otherwise.
Yeah, I know.
Good morning and welcome. It's 9:53 on the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. Now it's your turn for things that make you smile. Call in with upbeat, positive thoughts, non-political. Brought to you by Transformation Dentistry and Dr. Samantha Annis. 877-975-9825. Call in now, please. And good morning, Kay. What's making you smile?
Oh, good morning, Bob, and thank you for the Bob Rose Show. I'm telling you, that pothole is fixed. It is so beautiful. It is fixed perfectly. I never could have done a job like that with quickcrete and water. It is done. Thank you, Bob, and thank you, Marion County. My car's alignment is safe, and you all keep the angels with you all weekend long. I love the Bob Rose Show. God bless you.
Bye-bye. God bless you, Kay, and thank you, and we'll take all the angels we can get. Let's go to Jason. Good morning. What's making you smile?
Man, all the good corny jokes y'all been coming up with this morning, and I got one about the penny bit. The old saying, a penny for your thoughts now costs you $5. Oh, somebody stop me.
Oh, we will.
We will.
We will. We will. Oh, yeah. We will.
Oh, yeah. We got you.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
You got the hook right off the stage right
Matt,
there.
But on the other side of that?
Yes. It's true.
Your corny jokes make my corny jokes look a little better. So,
Bob likes
you
that.
Call any time. Really. Call
wow.
Every day.
Yeah.
Good morning, Mark. What's making you smile?
Good morning, Bob and Greg. Thanks for your solemn coverage of the actual meaning of Memorial Day. But what's making me smile is when we were growing up in high school in Southern California in the 80s, we had a friend named Lance, but his nickname was The Remains. And it's kind of like, oh, well, have you talked to The Remains lately? And so every time you said The Remains early today, I just had to roll over on the floor laughing.
Bringing back some memories, stirring it up. It's what we try to do.
But I don't know that I would want to know why that's somebody's nickname.
I wasn't going to go there either. Because it's upbeat, positive thoughts and things that make you smile. Yeah. And I know, Greg, you got to have something.
Oh, it did. Got Blake all graduated last night.
Congratulations.
You are a graduate now.
And award-winning.
Yes, he did. He did well. He did very well. We were proud of him. It was a great night. Very enthusiastic crowd. And you just never know who you're going to run into. Santa Fe Police Chief Ed Book was there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I got
Book him, Ed.
Book
what
him.
We like
yeah,
to say.
That's right. That's right. So I got to see him. That was always good.
Oh,
so,
that was it?
A good time had by all and lots of food to the house afterwards.
Hmm.
So.
All right. Well, I'm going to try to maybe make it to the beach, I think,
yes.
Is on the possible agenda. And I got some accoutrements for my new motorcycle.
Your new chariot, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so we must get out on the roadway at some point with that, probably earlier rather than later, based on the 94, 96, 95 degree temperatures coming our way over the next few days. But enjoy, my friends. Coming up next, it's The Smoking Gun, brought to you by Lawful Defense and Shoot GTR. Time now for The Smoking Gun, brought to you by Lawful Defense and Shoot GTR. It was Officer Nicole Brown, now 39 years old, working in California. She received a minor abrasion trying to arrest a suspect, told her watch commander about it, and She went to the emergency room, and they said, no, you're good to go, back to work. Well, she called in sick for several days, later diagnosed with a severe concussion, and, well, she didn't go back to work for a couple of years, racking up about $600,000 worth of workman's comp. The problem is, she was at a soccer conference, she ran two 5K races, she went skiing, and various other activities. So now she might be cooling her heels, and that will put the chill on the smoking gun. Brought to you by Lawful Defense and Shoot GTR.